talk, big opinions, the panel.
Right, panel this morning consists of Jamie Wall and Sam Ackerman. And Sam Ackerman, of course, the NRL concluded last night, late last night. Penrith absolutely way too good for the Eels to go back-to-back. The 36-year drought for Parramatta continues. Sam, what did you make of that dominant performance?
Yeah, there's no other word for it but dominant, Smithy. Good morning to you and then to Jamie. It's a performance that underlines exactly what this team is, and it's ruthlessly consistent. To be able to if you said 5 years ago that you would compare the Penrith team to the most dominant of the Storm teams, or even up, you know, the Broncos in their heyday, people said, "Oh, look, they've been good, but not that good." This team's got the potential to go better and further. It's terrifying. For those who don't kind of follow the tabs of it, they won virtually every competition they were in throughout the grade. So they won four of the grades all the way down to SG Ball. It's terrifying to think that they've got these champions being bred right through, ready to go and bust out on this team. They lost four games all year, and the only team that's had their number was the Eels, and we saw what they did to them in the grand final. Parra didn't offer a shot. It was maybe one of the least interesting grand finals of the modern era. I think you go back to 2000s was a bludger as well, with the Broncos winning that one. But it was a sheer example of what a team with the right attitude could do. You saw them score their tries. Yep, they were a little bit elated, but they were pretty much jogging back to halfway for the next crack. This is a team that was polished in that era, in this level of environment with the grand final. They're unfazed by the atmosphere. It's remarkable, and it's terrifying to think what they can do from here. What we can take out of it, though, if you're a Warriors fan searching for some kind of positive, 18-0, 28-0 before there was the last couple of tries given, when you know you're thinking about lifting a premiership trophy. That defence that has won them two straight premierships, the man who's behind that defence is now going to be in charge of the Warriors. Andrew Webster brings that experience of knowing how to dominate a team with the defence. If the Warriors can be a quarter as good as that, they're going to be in the playoff picture quite regularly. So that's promising, but what a performance.
That is a hell of a good point you raise, actually. I clean forgot all about that in the clinical side of things of what I watched last night. Jamie, I'm not sure whether you took it in or not, but it was, in terms of a spectacle, in terms of a contest, very one-sided. But in terms of the clinical nature of the way that league should be played, it was a lesson, I would have thought.
Yeah, morning, Smithy. Morning, Sam. Yeah, I certainly did stay up and watch it, and I have to say, I agree with Sam. It's terrifying what the Panthers have done. Like he said, they didn't just win the grand final. They won the SG Ball and the Jersey Flag and the New South Wales Cup as well. In fact, the only thing they didn't win was the NRL Women's Comm, because they don't have a team in it. And if they did, they'd probably win that too. The other thing that Sam also brought up, you know, obviously one of the reasons why the Panthers sort of got under everyone's skin is because of the way that they go about their games. They celebrate wildly after each try and everything. And that's what got me about last night, is that they were scoring tries in a grand final and just acting like, oh, yeah, it's just another day on the job. And to me, that just says, like, well, we're in here for the long haul. This is a dynasty. We've just created one. We're gonna keep going next year. And I read something this morning just saying, like, oh, you know, the team's sort of breaking up a little bit. They're losing Bill Kickow and Cameron Serraldo and obviously Andrew Webster. But I really think that they're still in a position now to be attracting, you know, talent that will more than make up for what they're losing, because it's like, who wouldn't want to go and be a part of that setup right now, both as a coach and a player? So yeah, it's a real dynasty building moment for this team, and well done to them. And let's just not forget that the guy who's in charge of that, and his son who's in charge of things on the field, both of the Warriors. I mean, admittedly, one was a ball boy, but you know, that's the hard thing to think about when you're a Warriors fan.
Jamie, at the weekend, Roger Tuivasa-Sheck played on the wing for Auckland, which was one of the positions when he first crossed over. People said, let's start him out on the wing. And the All Blacks have said, no, he's got to be in the midfield. But Auckland found space for him on the wing. And he's also shot down any idea of a move to the Roosters.
Yeah, I don't know if I believe any of the talk around either of those things happening, actually. It was a real last-minute switch by Auckland to put him out on the wing. And what was not a great day for wingers, it was absolutely hosing down all of Saturday, which is why there was about 25 people at that game, which is another thing we can talk about a little bit later. But the game did actually end up being a little bit better than what thought it would be. Auckland did mount a pretty good comeback there. But yeah, seeing him out on the wing there was like just another example of kind of, I feel like this whole thing has been mismanaged quite a bit. Like by now he should be solidly in a position, getting minutes on the park all the time. And I think that what we're going to see is, you know, another kind of shoehorning of him into the All Blacks setup on this tour. I feel like there's probably going to be a place for him in that test against Japan. Whether he then switches over to that All Blacks 15 so he can get some more game time, I don't know. And then he's made a statement saying that, you know, he's not going to go back to the Roosters. Well, he didn't say he wasn't going to go back to the NRL at any stage. Like, I could totally see that happening because, you know, like, it's a sports contract situation. He's going to know by sort of February next year whether he's in the All Blacks plans for the World Cup. And if he's not, well, what's the point in sticking around? So, yeah, all of that kind of remains to be seen. But we're going to know pretty soon what his future holds, what the future holds for Roger Tuivasa-Sheck.
We'll take a quick news break. When I come back, Sam, I'd love to hear your thoughts on what you've heard about a possible move. Was it all just a beat-up? But it looks like he's destined to at least stay in rugby union for the first half of next season anyway. 10:31 here. We'll hear from Araha and we'll be back with the boys shortly.
Big talk, big opinions, the panel. Talk to me,
yeah. Jamie Wall, Sam Ackerman with us this morning. And Sam, I just wonder if there was any real teeth to the RTS story going to the Roosters, and what do you feel about that?
Well, first of all, you've got to understand that Roger Tuivasa-Sheck I've been lucky enough to spend a fair bit of time around the guy and talk to him a lot, got to understand how he operates with the Kiwis and at the Warriors. He is not the kind of guy who's afraid of a challenge. I mean, if he was, he would never have been a Warrior, would he? I mean, he had life pretty sweet at the Roosters, didn't need to go anywhere. He chose to come home, and obviously family, and I'm sure a little bit of money played a part of that, but he didn't need to come here. He didn't just come here. He came here and got improved and was crowned the best player in the entire NRL while playing for the Warriors. Let that sink in. The best player of the whole NRL were playing for the Warriors. So he won't be flipping out or trying to pull himself out of a contract. He knows that it's a challenge to make the All Blacks. He didn't think it was going to be a cakewalk. I don't think that you could say anything he's done has been unsuccessful or a failure so far. I think Jamie hit it on the head. He's not really being managed wonderfully as far as putting him in the right position with the right minutes and giving him game time. But he's playing right now his first NPC campaign. Last one got COVID out for him. But he has not had much time in rugby. He's already in the All Blacks setup. Limited game time. Who knows how well he fits in that environment. There have been missed opportunities, and I'm guessing there will continue to be missed opportunities. But I think that his skill and talent can keep him in that World Cup squad. And we've seen on plenty of occasions that making a World Cup squad, you might be one of those guys who might play a couple of games. And of course, he'd want to be putting himself in a position to play in the finals. But I'm sure he's also seeing himself the goal of being there. One injury, one moment in a game can create something for someone like Roger Tuivasa-Sheck, and he's got that world experience to go on. I'm confident he can do it. As for going to the Roosters, that'll always be an option because Nick Politis will be in touch with management all the time, checking out, seeing how he's going. I also did hear a bit of a rumour though when he was released, you know, and sent off into the world, that the Warriors may or may not be given first right of refusal. So I expect him to come back to rugby league unless he really kicks on and starts dominating rugby next year. Can't see him being given that opportunity, but I expect him to be seeing through his contract. And Jamie's right, if he's not going to make the World Cup, then I think he would think, okay, well, you know, that's why I came to here and I didn't achieve that goal, well, I'll go back. But I don't know, man. I don't expect him to pull sticks as early as February.
Okay, that's good news from RTS rugby fans. Sam, the Kiwis confirmed this morning. Looks very, very strong squad. Just one warrior in the group in terms of Dallin Watene-Zelezniak. But apart from that, are you confident now?
I don't mean this to sound as glib as it is, but having one warrior in the team actually helps my confidence levels at the moment. But there are two future warriors coming in. Ned Cora is on his way as well. So I'm looking forward to seeing those who are going to play for the Warriors get a good crack and a good run. It's a predictable team. They are predictable in a great way. I mean, there's no need to switch things up. Of the 10 players who are in that wider squad who missed out, Sean Johnson's obviously the highest profile. And I feel actually Tamati Martin's utility value might be something that they could use in that run. And a young forward like Jordan Riki's been pointed out is, you know, unlucky to miss out. But honestly, I think the calls all look right at this stage. And Sebastian Chris getting a chance to impose himself in the outfield there would be interesting, given a chance. But he would really need to push hard to find himself a place in those top starting sides. Strong squad, really happy with what they've picked. And there's a reason why the Australians are going out of their way to call the New Zealanders favourites. I know Kempe has been the same as well, because this is a strong squad and there's nothing to think that if they play to the game, they can't trouble every team in the comp.
Okay, let's look forward to that. Campaign starts actually against Lebanon, then Jamaica and then Ireland. So you didn't think they'd have too many problems. Yeah, we're all the big boys, Sam. So the only thing you're trying to avoid there is injury, I would imagine, to some key players. So it'll be interesting to see how that squad is managed throughout that. Right, let's get to some rugby, Jamie Wall, and you touched on it. Crowds. I watched quite a lot of rugby in the weekend, and I've got to say, watching back-to-back-to-back games of rugby doesn't do much for me in terms of the lack of playing time at times and the penalties, etc., that are dished out for every little thing, with three people officiating the game, basically, and then a TMO as well. So what do we come up with this weekend? We've got Canterbury against Northland, North Harbour hosting Auckland, Wellington, Hawke's Bay and Waikato Bay are plenty, and all these sides have played each other already.
Yeah, and Waikato and Bay Plenty played each other on the weekend, so it's just a replay of that. I can't get my head around the quarterfinal process, because shouldn't they be playing across the conferences that are made up? They've actually finally come up with a system that most people can understand, and then it doesn't work out the way it should at the business end. But you know, I guess we've got the better teams playing one another. I think it's looking like a Canterbury Wellington final, which Wellington of course will lose, because that's just what they do. They've been in 8 finals since they won it in 2000 and lost every single one of them. So yeah, I mean, this is just me talking as a Wellington fan. You know, I never want to get my hopes up about anything involving that team. But yeah, you talk about crowds and you talk about the product itself, and I have to agree, it's not a great product at the moment. The one thing you used to be at least be able to count on with the NPC is that it was a more free-flowing game, because the defences were a little bit more shaky than, say, Super Rugby or Test Rugby, and so you'd see quite a lot of decent tries. Like, we have seen some good rugby play in the NPC, there's just not enough of it at the moment. It's a hard watch, because, you know, you're seeing a lot of players that you're not familiar with. The crowds have been awful, and it looks really bad on TV. And especially when you compare it to, and I know it's Australia, and I know that they have the infrastructure, and I know they obviously have the population, but you look at the last two big sporting events in Australia, you look at the AFL Grand Final and the NRL Grand Final, and they're two dud matches, really. Like, well done to the Panthers and well done to Geelong for getting out there and winning the games. But they were basically both over after 15 minutes. But what you saw was these gigantic crowds that were in there for a massive match day experience. And that it's something that has been completely forgotten about or just ignored by the people that run rugby in this part of the world, is that no thought's been put into the experience you have on a match day. And I think that that's a massive blight on the game itself, and that all of this attention's been focused on the All Blacks and just what their whole setup, and nothing else at all. And it's really coming back to bite rugby in the ass, because the only sold out Super Rugby game we had all year was the final, and it was because it was in Auckland. And I just worry, you know, that we're going to be having basically televised club rugby sized crowds going forward. It's really sad to see.
It's going to be, I'll tell you what, it continues in the same vein. It's going to be like looking at Heartland rugby with the same crowds, and perhaps that's where they need to go.
It was in Kaikohe on Saturday. I mean, they were playing at a club ground with goalposts that were like soccer goalposts as well. Like, how can you possibly hold a first-class domestic match with not even proper posts? So you can imagine what the changing rooms would have looked like and all the other facilities. It's disgraceful. And it just shows just how the lack of attention and care that's been given to this. You know, we've had issues with the TMO all season because they haven't bothered to pay enough for extra cameramen to be on deck for that. And so therefore it's completely disrupted the integrity of the entire competition from an officiating point of view. So it just, I mean, that sort of stuff pisses me off, and because it's like, you know, New Zealand could rightfully say we had the best domestic competition in the world going around, and we really can't say that anymore. Really can't.
No, we can't. We certainly can't. I'm lucky enough to remember when we did. But the modern generation will never know it. It'll just be consigned to the history books, I feel, anyway. Sam, great news for Ryan Fox overnight. Winning a tournament. He's always been pretty handy at, actually, the Alfred Dunhall Lynx Championship. Played with Shane Warne last year as his amateur partner. Dedicated a bit of this to Shane Warne as well. So Ryan Fox, the genuine item now, is high as, I think, about number 26 in the world.
And look, it might be just like 6 months away of all the lived affections from being two or three at the moment. The way that he plays is joyous to watch. If you like golf, there's no way you can't enjoy watching Ryan Fox play. He's not a guy who's going to settle for the easy option. He attacks it. He's got he's some subtlety to his play, but he just loves to go at it, and he is a joy to watch. I mean, you're very proud to see him fly that New Zealand flag, which he flies so proudly as well. It's not something that, you know, a lot of golfers kind of fly their flag as part of what they're doing to make their crust, whereas he is very, very much there representing New Zealand while making a living, and that's its choice. So I love seeing him go. He has worked his backside off for this. You might think being the son of an All Black legend would put you in quite a privileged position. I'm sure it has in different points of his career, but when he gets to, when he's got onto the pro circuit and got himself to where he is, he's dragged himself up by the bootstraps, and he could have stayed in the lower echelon thinking, oh, I can make a halfway decent living. But tournaments like this just show that he backs himself, and he won't if it doesn't come off, he goes, oh well, like, at least I gave it a crack. It came off. He's made himself a wonderful whack of cash. Just thrilled for him, and to see him so, you know, beaming like that. And I know the Shane Warne side of things has brought a little bit of touch of sadness with it, but he is a bloke who you just want to see succeed. And there's some, we live in the tall poppy syndrome and world where online people love to pull someone down. I've never, ever seen someone say a negative comment or what a wanker or this and that about Ryan Fox ever. And that's as big a compliment you can give an athlete these days.
Absolutely right. Sam Ackerman, Jamie Wall, thanks so much for your contributions this morning. Some strong opinion there on the panel. We shall have another one at the same time tomorrow morning. It's 10:45 here on SENZ.